Okay, Rabbi Liebzag, part three, and other people will listen afterwards. Bevakasha, the Ger in Sefer Shmot. I did post the sources on the side there, and they're on the website. I'll post it again. Okay, Bevakasha.
In the middle of the share, posted in like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
So let me share my screen, and here we go. So it's class number three, Conference of Strangers, Who's the Torah Care About, and today's Sefer Shmot. Every week we'll do another book. Some books might take more than a week, I'm sorry, but we'll play that by ear. So I just got a quick little review about how often the stranger is mentioned. And remember, last week we talked about the two times in Sefer Bereshit, which were fundamental, in Brit Ben Abtarim, and later when Avram buys his burial place in Hebron, this week's Parsha. Shmot we have 12 times. We're going to go through them. We're going to focus on that. Vayikra 21, Bamidbar 11, Devarim 22. So Shmot's not the main book, but it's going to be key in making our definitions. Our study today will help us define what's the difference between a ger who's Jewish and not Jewish. I say Jew or Gentile. Chazal call it ger toshav and ger tzedek. So real quickly, I'm going to mention just in Hebrew, the 12 times we find ger in Sefer Shmot is a start. And then hopefully by then, whoever finds the login will start the share in about 4 or 5 minutes. So the first time we actually mentioned in our opening share, when Moshe Rabbeinu has his first child, he names the child Gershon, ki says Ger Haiti Beretz Nochriya. And we pointed out that Moshe Rabbeinu himself, the person who God gives the Torah to, Moshe Rabbeinu, basically our Moshe Rabbeinu, he himself feels that he's a Ger his entire life. And the person who gives us the Torah, sort of God orchestrates events that he himself, Moshe Rabbeinu himself, is living the life of a stranger, and therefore he can identify with the stranger and give us laws about how we treat the stranger. Now, the next time we have ger, which is the main time, is the laws of Passover about eating chametz, and we're told that a ger cannot have chametz. And if he eats chametz, he's cut off from his people, he gets karet. We're going to spend a lot of time on this pasuk, as well as the main pasuk, which has been most, like the main part of this year, our defining pasuk, about a ger bringing Korban Pesach. That the fact that a ger can bring Korban Pesach, but he has to do Mila first, that verse is going to be key in understanding ger through the rest of Chumash. And the verse that follows, the same about the Ezrach and the ger, we'll spend a lot of time on these two psukim. Again, we have it with in Parsha Yitro. We mentioned why Moshe names his son Gershon. Shabbat and a ger, we're going to spend a whole share on that, probably it'll be an extra one. There's a great argument. Is the ger who has to keep Shabbos and the Ten Commandments, is he Jewish or not Jewish? That's worth a whole share. It's just a machloket among the commentators about that. It will be a lot easier to study that pasuk after we've done our definitions. The next two in Parshat Mishpatim will be the main part of the second half of today's year. Why they're so central in Parshat Mishpatim. We'll see those who are talking about can include even a non-Jewish stranger. And then we have Shabbat again, which goes back to the Ten Commandments about who has to keep Shabbat, and what's the ger who has to keep Shabbat or can't work for us on Shabbat. Okay, so that's the 12 times in Sefer Shmot, and we're going to focus again on the Korban Pesach one and the ones in Parshat Mishpatim. Now we'll start our share. I guess who's ever on board will be on board, and we can start. Okay, so a quick review of our main distinction, what I call a chiluk. Okay, in Chumash, in the 67 times we have in Chumash, some are our obligations for our caring for a stranger. Others are the obligation of the stranger himself. My claim was, which I have to prove today, is that whenever there are laws of our obligation to a stranger, it includes not only a stranger who converted, not only a ger tzedek, but also a ger toshav, any stranger. It could be he might have to commit to keeping the laws of Noah or not be an idol worshiper. He has to be a good person. He can't be detrimental to society. But a ger doesn't necessarily have to be Jewish. And our proof was because we can feed him the velot. So certainly sometimes the ger is not Jewish. And my claim was whatever, which we have to substantiate, is that whenever the Chumash talks about stam a ger, about obligation for a ger, it's always someone, it includes someone, even one who did not convert, even a ger toshav. Okay? Where whenever there's a ger with an obligation, it has to be a ger who converted. Now, what was my proof of that? I pointed out that when we went through all the cases, whenever there's an obligation of the ger, almost exclusively we find his punishment for a transgression is karet from the nation, being cut off from his people. And if he's cut off from his nation, he must be part of the nation, and thus he's a convert. Why Chumash talks about that, that'll be our topic in Sefer Vayikra, why it goes out of his way to mention it. In contrast, when we have an obligation to the stranger, it can be any stranger, convert or Gentile. Okay. There are temples of Nevela. Now, we went through last week a little bit, the 67 times, and what we were claiming. There were two instances when it's crystal clear that it's the ger is a convert. Whenever it says keger ke ezrach, we'll define that today. Whenever there's a ger together with the word ezrach, ezrach and ger, part of the people of Israel, when that it's referring to a ger who's converted, and we're saying in ezrach is like the ger has the same status as an ezrach. I try to explain an ezrach is someone of the 12 tribes of Israel who has land rights, and in Yovel, his land goes back to him. A ger can never become an ezrach by definition, at least until Yechezkel, at least during the first temple period, up to the end of the first temple period, because the first division of the land was to the 12 tribes. And even if you convert, you can't become a member of a tribe. You're only a ger, and therefore Chumash goes out of its way to give you special rights because you don't have that financial security. But I might think because you didn't come out of Egypt or because you're just a ger, maybe you don't have the same obligations. So no, everyone has the same obligations, even if you don't have rights in Yovel. But I'll try to explain that whenever it says keger kezrach, it's referring to a converted ger or a ger tzedek. So we have the two cases in Shmot chapter 12, which will be our first topic today. We have later in Bamidbar, this we did last week. These are all the cases where we have ger shebetochachem with them. I'll try to explain to you that's his obligation. And it's always referring ger shebetochachem or itchem is referring to someone who converted, or betocham, the same word. And ger b'Yisrael will also be someone among Israel. Those are all the examples of the wording when it's a Jewish convert. All the other cases are our obligation for the stranger, and it can be ger shebisharecha, that will be in the later shiurim. Now, the main point I try to make also is there's three times in Chumash where I find a set of laws about day-to-day Jewish life. In Parshat Mishpatim, chapters 21 through 23 in Shmot, which are the topic today, the second half of today's year, in Vayikra chapter 19, Kedoshim 2, and the main speech in Devarim, in all these three sections, the ger is any stranger, even a ger toshav, and we'll try to prove that in our study today. Okay, let's begin with Sefer Shmot, chapter 12. Let's just simply go in order. The first time we find a ger being obligated is the laws of chametz on the 7 days of Pesach. It's easy Hebrew, I'll just translate. Shivat yamim sor lo yivasev b'techem. 7 days of Passover, or 7 days of Chag HaMatzot, you can't have sor, you can't have leaven in your house. Why? Ki ko chamachmetzet, anyone eating anything leaven, v'nichreta nefesh heim mi'adat Yisrael. That nation is cut off again from the adat of Israel. That's the Jewish people. Be he a ger or an ezrach in the land. Now, this ger, my claim is, has to be a ger tzedek, because he's part of adat Yisrael. I can't call him a member of the Jewish nation if he's not converted. And it better be, because otherwise we couldn't sell our chametz to a non-Jew. But this ger has to be a convert. And I'll just bring Rashi. Rashi on the spot tells us, "Beger be'ezrach, lefi shanes nasel Yisrael hutzach larbot et gerim." So if he's like everyone else, why include him? Why mention him? Just say he's obligated. If he's a ger tzedek, why mention him? Of course he's obligated. So someone might think because a ger never came out of Egypt, maybe he's not obligated to keep chametz, or maybe he can't bring Korban Pesach. Therefore, he tells you that's why we have to include the ger. Rashi is explaining why I have to include the ger in this law. And Ebenezer says the same thing. Ushnei Yisraelim, the ger and Ezrach, they're both Jewish. Shalo Yomer, so the ger shouldn't say, I'm not chayv take matzah. And therefore, it's talking about a ger toshav who's mit yehei. It's talking about a ger who was once not Jewish and now became Jewish. Okay? And also, we add the ger shu ger tzedek. Basically, all the parshanim, Rashi, Ebenezer agree, this has to be a ger tzedek. Now remember, I mentioned in the beginning, in academia, their claim is that every ger, there's no conversion until the Second Temple period, that's what they claim, and every ger in Chumash is not Jewish, and he has an obligation because he's living in our land, he has to follow the laws of Passover. I don't think it makes sense, but if you want to read, I'm not trying to encourage you to read academic works, but everyone in academia goes in that direction. But that's Hoffman, if you heard of him. He's a more a recent, you know, from the last century. He brings up, I just want to show you his comment. He says, Begera filo hager, even a ger has to bring, can have chametz. Uchuman shav ganav the ger tzedek. Of course, he's talking about a ger tzedek. V'zeh mistapech l'am Yisrael, anyone who joins the Jewish people, is obligated in this mitzvah. Okay? Af pi shechag ha-matzot ein halacha gumi. Even though Chag HaMatzot is a national holiday, it's how we became Jewish, how our nation began, and this ger was not part of the nation way back, despite that, Chumash has to include him, very much like what Rashi and Ibn Ezra were saying. Now, he says as follows. B'ruy the tzayin, we should point out, she'be'etzem, eina Torah melamedet otanu b'shum makom b'furash she'achol nachri litger l'kabel al'atzmot ha'Yisrael, af ki'ein ha'davar muva me'elav. Okay. He says as follows. He points out what the academic people point out. Because that's how he's trying to counter the, you know, the early Bible critics. It's one of his pastimes. So what's he saying? He wants to point out, because he's reading his Bible criticism, that nowhere in Chumash does it teach us that it's possible to convert. Because it doesn't say anywhere in Mufurash. Nowhere it says explicitly that a non-Jew, that a Nachri, can become Jewish, can convert. And he says, Harei Afshar, and he says, I could make the claim, which the academics do, just like Yisrael can't become a Kohen or a Levi, just like Yisrael can't become a Kohen, a non-Jew can't become Jewish. He's saying there's logic to thinking in the biblical system there's no room for converts. Okay. So how do we know we can? Because many mitzvot were told that the ger, the stranger, has the same obligation as the citizen of Israel, we know that there must be a possibility of conversion. If I know, I'm just using Radatz Hoffman to support what we've been saying all along, that even though it's not explicit, it's implicit. Now, I want to support what these commentators are saying in the story of Zotchat HaPasach. So this is the next pasuk. I'll just read it with English Hebrew. For some reason, this law really belongs to the beginning of chapter 12 with the laws of Passover, but it's mentioned after we leave Egypt. It's at the end of chapter 12. Why? That's a shir in Sefer Shemot. We're not going to go into it now. But after we come out of Egypt, at the end of chapter 12, we have sort of an addendum, like almost an appendix to the story of the Exodus. It says as follows. V'yomer Hashem Moshe ve'el Aaron, Zot chukat ha-pasach, kol ben echar lo yochabo. There's a general law. This is the statute of Korban, when you bring Pesach, no non-Jew can eat it, meaning only members of the Jewish people are can eat Korban Pesach. How about if you have a servant? If there's a servant or anyone you own, right? If he does milah, if he does circumcision, then he can eat it. Now, the question is going to be, what does that mean? That mean he has to convert? Is this a technicality that if you eat Korban Pesach, you have to be circumcised? Or does it mean if you want to eat Korban Pesach, you have to become Jewish? And this question, is this an Eved Ivri or an Eved Kanani that becomes Jewish later on? That's a whole sugya in Halakha, which we're not going to go into now. In contrast to someone born into your family, like someone you own, a Toshav HaSachir, someone, a temporary resident, or someone working for you from the outside, can't eat it because he's not Jewish. And we have to eat it in the same house. You can't take the meat outside. Technical laws for Korban Pesach. Now comes our topic. We summarize and say as follows: Pasuk Mem Zayin, Kol Adat Yisrael Yasuoto, meaning the entire congregation of Israel has to do it. I want to point something out. Again, not our topic. Before we start, I mentioned that Korban Pesach is never called a Korban; it's called a Pesach. But the verb that always comes up when we bring the Pesach is Asiya. Why? Maybe when they said we'll dedicate a share to it. But it's very interesting that the verb that's always associated with Pesach is not hakrava, not sacrificing, but doing. Asiyat Pesach. You look later by Pesach Sheni, you have the same word. We have it in chapter 12. Maybe we'll take a look at it later on. The verb is asiyah. And by Yasub and Esau, the Pesach, by Ma'ado. Maybe we'll bring some examples later on. But let's go back now. What are we told? The entire congregation of Israel, that Israel, that's the whole nation, we'll see in a minute, including converts, have to do it. Now we explain what we mean by this. In other words, this is the introductory statement that has to be explained. Should there be a stranger among you, we'll see in a minute, any stranger, this ger has to be a ger toshav, right? Vasa Pesach Hashem, but he wants to bring Korban Pesach. It means if there's a stranger who's not Jewish, but he wants to join in Korban Pesach, he can't, unless what? He molo kol zachar. First, he has to do circumcision, and then he can come la'asoto again to do it. Okay? And then he becomes the status of an Ezrach. And then we summarize, and anyone uncircumcised can eat Korban Pesach. Now again, what's this saying? What Chazal learned from here, which I think makes a lot of sense, is that this is the process of conversion. What happens? What are we saying? Korban Pesach can only by someone who's Jewish. What makes you Jewish? So if there's a stranger who's not Jewish, he can't eat Korban Pesach. If he wants to be Korban Pesach, first he has to convert. How do you convert? By doing Brit Milah. Brit Milah makes sense. It's a conversion process because Brit Milah is the covenant between God and Avram Avinu that we talked about last week, where Avram enters a covenant, that he'll be our God, will be his people. The covenant that becomes formal at Har Sinai, began in Brit Milah with what's called the circumcision covenant in Bereishit chapter 17. So it makes sense that circumcision, because it's a key covenant between God and Avram Avinu and his offspring to become a nation in the service of God. So it makes sense that that would be the process that needs to be done to make conversion official. Now, watch what happens. When this happens, I'll follow the reading carefully. Now you got to fix my screen. There we go. Okay. He does circumcision, and then he has the status of an Ezrach. He's not an Ezrach, but he has the same status as an Ezrach, but he's not an Ezrach. And that's my point. A ger can never become an Ezrach. You can convert, but you can't become an Ezrach because Ezrach is someone, a member of the 12 tribes. Okay. Now that this ger converted, listen carefully now. Torah chad yele Ezrach, v'lager hagar betochechem. Now that this ger is converted, he has the status of an Ezrach, therefore I can say keger kezrach. But now, what's he defined as? That's a ger hagar betochechem. And that's why I showed you before, whenever I have this phrase, whenever there's an obligation of a ger, it's almost exclusively this phrase, either keger kezrach or ager gar betochechem. We'll see it all through Vayikra and Bamidbar. Whenever there's obligation and there's a prohibition that his punishment is karet, it didn't say stam ger, it says ager gar betochechem. And this defines it. What makes you a ger in your midst? That's a convert. And b'nei Yisrael do, as God said, again, vayasu si the verb asiya, v'asu b'nei kashur si basha b'noshe, v'asun kein asu. It's just amazing how the word Asiya is always associated with Korban Pesach. So that's our second source in Shmuel. I want to show you now what some of the commentators say about this process. So again, Shadal, Shmuel David Dutzato, also a more recent commentator, says, Chiyachurt Chager, that Razal, what's the rabbis, what do they say in Pesachim? Kibre Ger Tzedek Medubar, right? It's talking about a Ger Tzedek, Shemakeva Lav Torah Kula. In other words, who can bring a Korban Pesach? Only a ger who is totally converts. Okay? Umnam mina mikra ze mashma bevirur, ki gam kodem shimo nikra ger. But we see from here that a ger can be called a ger before he's Jewish. Listen, Shaddai wants to prove from here the ger can have a multiple meaning in Chumash. Sometimes the ger is Jewish, sometimes he's not Jewish. Sometimes he's ger toshav, sometimes he's ger tzedek. In Cain, Hager lo kibel lav kol ha-mitzvot, v'lo ma'al b'nena b'chal Yisrael. So, v'chi agur et hager, ger toshav. He's not Jewish yet. If he wants to bring Pesach, he has to do conversion, and then he's ke'ezrach ha'aretz, then he's a ger agar b'tochachem. So that's what he's saying. We prove from this pasuk that there's two types of gerim in Chumash. I think it's a great proof. So I want to bring that Shaddai brings it out as well. Okay. Now, v'nei lefi horat ha-milot, lefi the words, he talks about the ger might be less than a toshav. He wants to differentiate what's the difference between a ger and a toshav. Maybe we'll talk about it later in a later share. So he claims that the toshav is someone who's settled down in the land, and a ger is someone who's only temporary. He says a toshav is more permanent than a ger, but a ger wants to go back to his land later on. Okay? And then he explains why Toshav is not mentioned. Then he says, maybe he disagrees with it later on. Then he says, we don't find this by all the mitzvot, only by some of them. We find it by Pesach. So if he wants to do it, he can't do it unless he does circumcision. So the question that I was bringing up, if it's a convert, then why mention it? He's Jewish. He should be chayav like everybody else. We have to explain every time there's a convert and a law for a convert of his obligation. Why do we have to mention that he's obligated if he's Jewish? So he brings the examples, which we're going to go through. When we bring korbanot, if he wants to bring a korban, we'll see this in Sefer Bamidbar, about the Nesachim, that what? A ger ke mekabel tuma, we'll see later on, all these things in Bamidbar. Basically, he's going to go through all the cases we did. And what's he going to say? He says, who needs forgiveness? We started talking about that last week. Then we get to the end. B'chozin reshu b'ger shebetzudon nimo v'nichas b'chal Yisrael. Whenever all these obligations of the ger, he went through what we did. All the different times there's an obligation of the ger. So he says, that has to be a ger tzedek, someone who converted. But not every ger in Chumash is a ger tzedek. Kashukach to be mikrazeh, b'chiyukot ha-ger. B'imkein, I want to pick this up. In other words, there's going to be a big argument among the commentators when we have a commandment to love the stranger or to not to mistreat the stranger. Again, when our obligation to the stranger, is it only one who converted or including one who didn't convert? So Shaddai now wants to learn from here, and that's what we're trying to make. So I want to point out that Shaddai made the same point, is that because it's clear that sometimes a ger is not a convert, and sometimes he is, that proves that whenever we mention a ger, it can include someone who didn't convert. A ger can be a ger toshav. And therefore, our commandment to love a ger includes even someone who didn't convert. And that's a big fundamental point, because the question is, when Chumash, as we'll see soon, goes out of its way to mention over and over again how we have to be nice to the stranger, not to mistreat the stranger. Is it only a stranger who converted, or is it even a stranger who didn't convert, anyone in our community? And that has a big effect on how we, you know, how much we're meticulous on this law. Now, ba'asa Pesach means that he did it, but he wants to make a Pesach. Yirtzeh lasot korban Pesach atzmo, im b'nei bito. And then, so to do that, he again has to do circumcision. And then Torah Chat, we saw before. Rashi points out Torah Chat Lager, Lashvot Ger Lezrach, after Shar Mitzvot Shabbat Torah. From here, we learn that a Ger has obligated like every other thing. Then the question is, why mention him sometimes? Again, we'll see this. And Ebenezer says the same thing. Okay? And again, by Korban Pesach, Zeh Ger U Ger Tzedek, Velo Ger Shar. So what's Ebenezer say? There is a Ger Tzedek by Korban Pesach, but a Ger Shar, like we see later in Sefer Devarim, Ger Shebisharach is not Jewish. So again, I simply point out all the parshanim who make this clear distinction between a convert and a non-convert, a ger tzedek and a ger toshav, even though it's not explicit in Chumash, they all say it's implicit, and they're all arguing with the academic approach where they say there's no possibility of conversion until Second Temple period. I just want to bring them down because it's so prominent in academia that there's no such thing as conversion, and I think in my opinion, and I bring all these very serious parshanim, I think it's quite clear, even though it's not explicit, it's implicit. And it's important to point out that, and based on that, we know how that the need to treat the stranger carefully includes even someone not Jewish. Now, but on the other hand, it's possible for someone non-Jewish to become a ger. Now, that's part one of the shir, and I think that defines for us conversion. Any questions still here?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
The and once the Yisrael goes into Canaan, aren't they supposed to drive out the seven nations? If they commanded.
Okay, so let me explain why I understood your question. If there's a commandment to wipe out the seven nations, how can you have gerim in the land? So in the first stage of war to conquer the land, we have to go to war. But then there's a question in Sefer Devarim whether the commandment to make peace with everybody overrides the commandment to wipe out the seven nations. And the way most commentators understand Sefer Devarim, and that's what the Rambam says, we sent letters to everyone to make peace, and they all could have accepted peace. Now, in reality, we don't wipe out the seven nations, they remain. Let me show you something really interesting. Let me share my Chumash with you. Where's the Chumash? Exodus. Let's go to... I'll show you an interesting pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. We'll open up Divrei Hayamim. Let's close this down. Wait a second. Move this up. We want to go to Divrei Hayamim. That's Chronicles 1, chapter 22. Okay. What happens? After David decides where to build the Beit HaMikdash, it says, Vayomer David, lichnos et hagerim asher be'eretz Yisrael, ve'amet chutzfim lachsov avnei gazit, livnot bayit l'Elohim. Or Brazan Nechoshet, etc. Means, what does David do? David takes the strangers to do the construction work for building the Beit HaMikdash. What do we see? That there's many strangers who remain, not just the Givonim. There's many strangers still in the land. And we use them to build the Beit HaMikdash. Now, are these Ger Tzedek or Ger Toshav? It seems like they're Ger Toshav. But we're allowed to leave strangers in the land. Basically, there's a difference between residents living among us who aren't Jewish, who become part of our society. We have to be nice to them and give them jobs. They're civil partners. They're not covenantal partners. And the danger of having a separate nation in our land that is our enemy. In other words, we don't want a different sovereign people living in the same land with us. But strangers, we can not just tolerate, they become part of our society. In fact, they become a model for the way we treat our strangers, as we want other nations to learn from them. They have to be kind to their strangers. So we see that, and we didn't wipe out all the seven nations. Many of them remained. And till the time of David, they're still around, and they can even become part of our society. Now, the law of wiping out the seven nations, that's a complicated topic in itself, but I'll just give one quick summary because I think it's important. The law to wipe out the seven nations was a one-time command for the generation entering the land. It was limited. It gave a reason because of their bad behavior. We had the right to kick them out, but that was a divine command. It doesn't apply for future generations. And the main reason we need to know about that law is not to give us the right to kick out nations in the future, because the land belongs to God, not to us, but to tell us what will happen to us if we act the way they did. That's explicit in chapter 18 of Vayikra. We read it on Yom Kippur at Mincha. And what are we told? If we don't follow God's laws properly and act the way the Canaanites did, who God threw out because of their bad behavior, if we act as bad as they did, then we'll have the same fate. So knowing what happened to the seven nations and how God was strict with them, we need to know that not to give us the right to wipe out any non-Jew living in the land. We need to know that to know our responsibility, how we have to behave in the land. And if we act with our poor behavior and we're not kind to the stranger, then we might get the same punishment that they had. And that's what God says. We're liable of being thrown out of the land and being destroyed by foreign power if we don't keep God's laws properly. And those laws include how we treat the stranger. So that's why I'm making such a big deal about it. And that's why Marty's question is right on the mark. It's important to know when you read Chumash, it's very easy to say, oh, the Chumash says get rid of all the strangers and it's only Jewish land and you know, you can oppress anyone living here. If you look, read carefully, how we treat strangers on our land is critical. Again, it doesn't mean if we have enemies, we have to fight them and protect ourselves. But the way we treat the non-Jew in our land who's living among us, who takes on civil responsibility and wants to live in our country, we have to go out of our way to be kind to him, even kinder than we are to ourselves sometimes. Okay, I think there's lots more. I'm getting in trouble. Okay.
What about the female servant? If she wants to eat the Korban Pesach, well, she obviously can't undergo in super circumcision, so what happens to her? She can't eat it, or she has to do something else, or she's...
That's a great question, Shelley. I have to check. Oh, I forget who asked that question, but that's a great question, and I have to ask my local rabbi. I've never seen, and I should have thought of that. That's a great question. If there's conversion for
a female considered like a circumcised person.
What? The question, what does...
I heard somewhere that a female is considered like a circumcised person.
The what? Say that?
Female is considered like a circumcised person.
I mean, they don't need circumcision. And just to want to be... Just to want to eat Korban Pesach is enough. It's that. Who said that? Hillel?
Yeah.
That's in Halakha somewhere?
I think I heard that somewhere.
Okay. We have to find a source for that. I'll do my homework up, okay? But that's a good question. I'm surprised I didn't think of that myself, and I should have. That's what happens when you teach boys all day long in yeshiva. You don't think about practical questions like that. Okay. Ilana mentioned what I mentioned before. In Chumash, just when you marry a Jew, you're basically converted. That seems to be the case. But the question, what happens if you don't marry a Jew? What happens if you're just a stranger in the land, a female stranger living in the land? Can you be Korban Pesach or not? Or do you have to do some type of conversion? State you want to become Jewish. That's a really good question.
That's what changes, though. After Ezra, when he comes back in and he and Nehemiah have that thing on Rosh Hashanah, they make the people who had lived in the land and had non-Jewish wives and children get rid of them. So then obviously that's not considered that their wives converted.
So that's the question of those wives. Did they throw them out because they didn't convert, or even though they converted? That's a big question when you learn Ezra and Nehemiah. When he complains about the foreign wives, first of all, they were told to get rid of them. We see over and over again they didn't really do such a good job of getting rid of them. And the question is, was he complaining about non-converts who they married, or converts? And was there conversion then? Again, I have to do my homework on that, and hopefully we'll get that. Maybe we'll do the Ger and Navi after we finish the Ger and Chumash, 5 books. Maybe we'll do the Ger, and that'll give me time to do my homework on it. But those are great questions, and we'll get to them, I guess, in the weeks to come. Thank you for asking. Okay. I'm sure there's got to be some rabbinic literature on conversion for females, but we have to find it. I know a lot of nowadays you need mikveh and things like that, but how would that develop? We have to see. Okay, so let's open up now part two, which is the unit of laws. Now, I have to do a quick little class on Chumash now and talk about Parshat Mishpatim, a quick little review. We're going to find Ger mentioned in chapters 21 to 23, not that often, but in a very key position. It's not so much the Pasuk, but where it's located. Now, I want to follow the events coming out of Egypt. We come out of Egypt. It takes 6 or 7 weeks till we get to Mount Sinai. We have lots of events on the way. Finally, in Mount Sinai and Parshat Yitro, we enter a covenant to be God's people. That's called Brit Sinai. So in Parshat Yitro, in chapter 19, God makes a proposition. Do you want to obey me? Im shmot yishmu b'kodush shmartem et briti, you'll be my am skula, v'atem tiyudu mamlechet kone v'lai kadosh. We accept it. In light of that, we get the terms of the covenant called the Ten Commandments, or Aseret HaDevarim, the Ten Statements. And after the Ten Statements are over, God has more laws to teach, but the people get scared. So I'm going to open up my Chumash now, and I want to review where Parshat Mishpatim is presented. So let's open up a Chumash here. Shmot, open up the Perek. Here's the Ten Commandments. I'm sure you remember them. Chapter 20, the Ten Commandments we all know. When they're over, the people get very scared. Again, when this happened, big argument, but we'll just leave it in order for right now. The people get scared and don't want to hear any more directly from God. On the same day with the Ten Commandments, right, what happens? God tells Moshe, Kol Tamara B'nai Israel, tell the following laws to the Jewish people. On the same day as the Ten Commandments, there's a set of laws that Moshe teaches, that God tells Moshe to teach the people. Why does Moshe teach them? Because the people stand at a distance because they're afraid of hearing God directly. Now, what's he tell the people? You saw from Har Sinai that God spoke to you. Therefore, don't make images of God. Instead, if you want to serve God, keep it simple. Make a mizbech adama. It begins with a set of laws about how to serve God, how not to serve God. You want to serve God, not with golden images to represent God. Keep it simple. A simple altar made out of earth. You want to go special. You want to build out of fancy stones, simple stones. Do it. Either earthen mizbech, an altar, or a stone one, but keep it simple and no metal involved. Basically, the first law is a law about how to serve God, how not to serve God, and basically keeping it simple. But the laws continue. Even though it's the end of Parshat Shavuot, Parshat Yitro, God's still talking these laws in chapter 21. In Parshat Mishpatim, all chapter 21, okay? In chapter 22 to the middle of chapter 23, are 2.5 chapters, almost 3 chapters of laws that deal with day-to-day life as a Jewish people, mostly civil law, primarily between man and his fellow man. We'll see, the very end will be Shalosh Regalim. But we're going to have sort of an envelope structure where we have a law about how to serve God in the beginning, how to serve God at the end, one little line in the middle of how to serve God, but we're going to have two sections of civil, of laws between man and his fellow man. But pay attention to them. The first law is how to treat a slave, an Eved Ivri, an Amah. In other words, how do you treat a servant? Now, that's not, it's the first law we get after the Ten Commandments. And don't tell me it's not related to our suffering in Egypt. It's the first law we get as a Jewish people after the Ten Commandments, how do we treat in our society someone who's a servant? As servants, as slaves in Egypt, we were mistreated. If we have a servant, don't treat him like a slave, treat him like a worker. You own his work output, you don't own the person, you don't own his body. And therefore, the rights of the workers, male or female. Okay. Then we have laws about what's called nezikin, about damages. Makish knows you do damage to a person, you hurt them, you kill them, you're put to death. If it's unintentional, you have a place to run away to, then paying for damages, for stealing. Basically, it's the laws what we call nezikin. The rest of chapter 21 is if one person causes injury to another person, called Adam HaMazik. That's the first unit after Eved Ivri. And then should your property, should your animal harm another person, that's called Mamon HaMazik. Should your property, your animal, hurt another person, Shortam, Shormuad, anyone who learned Nezikin, Baba Kama, Baba Mitzi, etc., all the laws are there. You can cause damage to another person by opening up a hole in public property and causing someone damage. You can cause damage by, what do you call it? Your animals can cause damage by eating their field. You could steal someone's animal and cause tremendous financial damage. You have to pay an extra fine of 4 or 5 times. Basically, all chapter 21 and the first half of chapter 22 are laws about damages and basically the responsibility. You're responsible for your actions. And when you cause financial damage to somebody through assault, or through stealing, or through actions, or even shomrim, even if you're watching something, depending if you're getting paid or not, basically a person's responsible for his actions and we have to pay damages. Very basic civil law, the first chapter and a half. That's the Shoel. And then in the same context, you can also cause financial damage by a date going a little bit too far and sleeping with someone before they're married. And if you do that, you have to take her for a wife. If not, you have to pay the father her lost value. It's not that women are like property, but it's, again, financial damage caused by your actions. Then out of nowhere, we have a sort of interruption of the laws of financial damage. There's a law that we don't leave, we don't want witchcraft in our thing, and we don't want people sleeping with animals. Okay? That's a law. Is that a law for society? Is that benam lamakom, benam lachavero? Somewhere in between. And then we have one final law between man and God. Zovech le'elohim yachoram, b'otid Hashem levado. You can't bring sacrifices to other gods, only for our God. That's sort of a break in the topic. But notice all the laws up until now were case law. Should this case happen, here's the financial penalty. But they're all case law. They're called torts. Every society has them. Civil law, basically Masechet Nezikin. A new section of law begins, not of case law, but absolute law. All the laws up until the middle of chapter 22 in Parshat Mishpatim are called Mishpatim. They're laws that go to the court system. Basically, someone causes damage to another person. Financial damage, you have to pay what the damage you caused. And we have typical cases, and the rabbis learn from their basic principles about damages. We take a quick break and talk about laws of serving another god. And then we start a new topic with Pasuk Chaf. V'ger lo toneh, don't mistreat a stranger and don't oppress him. Why? Ki ger mi'item be'eretz Mitzrayim. Instead of a law with a case followed by a punishment, this is absolute law, not case law. A different style of law. And the next chapter and a half will be absolute law as opposed to case law. There'll be a new section. And this section begins with how not to treat a stranger and remembering because you were strangers in Egypt, how to treat, how you shouldn't treat or mistreat a widow and an orphan. And even though you can't take them to court on this, God will protect the stranger and orphan and punish you, and might cause you to become, might cause your wife to become a widow, or your children become orphan if you act that way to orphans and widows. Then the need to lend money and not to take interest when you lend money. And also, if you have a pledge, to return the pledge of someone who needs the pledge, a blanket or something at night. And then being a good citizen. And this continues in chapter 23 about laws for the judicial court system. Have to play favorites, returning lost items, not to misdo justice to people, divar sheker tirchak, keeping away from lying, not taking bribes, b'shachat lo tikach. Again, I just want to show the Hebrew, because this whole section ends with v'ger lo tirchak. So I'm going to show you a model of of the structure of this unit. We're going to spend a lot of time on this pasuk in chapter 23 that ends the between man and his fellow man. The last line again is about mistreating a stranger. Then the laws of Shemitah, 6 years of Shemitah, seventh year of working the land. But for the needs of the poor, working 6 days a week, resting on the seventh day also. So your workers have a day of rest, including the stranger. And then everything I told you to keep. Don't mention names of other gods. And then we have Shalosh Regalim, the three pilgrimage holidays, and that ends the whole law unit. Now, why do we do all this? I know that was a bit boring, but somebody wanted to review what we did. If you look at this law section, and here's my, back to our source sheet. If you look at the law section, let me make this smaller. This is going to be hard to see on the screen, but we'll try our best. I have to make it a lot smaller. Oh, that's not good. How do we make it smaller? There we go. Okay. I know you can't read it now, but we can draw bigger. There we go. That'll all fit. They're a little smaller still. Okay. In this law section, here we go, and I'll make a little drawing line. Okay. In this law section, it begins with laws between man and God. How to serve God and not to serve God. It ends with Shalosh Regalim, laws of how to serve God and not serve God, how to serve God properly. Smack in the middle, we have a law about serving God. This didn't come out so good. I have to redo this. I'm going to erase it and make it better. Change my color, make it red, and make a different drawing. Here we go. We have laws between how to serve God on the Mizbeach properly and how not to serve him. We end with Shalosh Regalim. Let me do this better now. We end with the three pilgrimage holidays. Okay. And we have a law about not serving God the wrong way in the middle. And these laws, I make it looks like a sandwich pretty much. It's an envelope structure of what of from here. If you follow the idea that the beginning and end is how to serve God. In the middle, how to serve God or how not to serve God. And in between, commandments between man and his fellow man. But what's special about them? Let's change the color here. We'll make this one yellow now and make it thicker. This section, there's two sections that are delimited by the Zoveach Elohim. The first section is case law. Which one is seeking? There's, again, a chapter half of this. I just summarized them, but some examples of it. And this law is absolute law. Got that? This law, there's two sections. I call this Mishpat and this Tzaka. Going back to what we said last week, that Abram was chosen to command his children to do Mishpat and Tzaka. The first set of laws we get, I think, are amazing. The structure is super important because we just entered to be covenant with God, to be his people. In classic religion, the way you serve God is by bringing sacrifices, you know, on altars, etc. And, you know, coming on pilgrimages. And sure enough, the envelope, the bookends of this law unit are about how to serve God, how not to serve God in the context of sacrifice and temple worship. But in between are the key laws of being Jewish, how to treat our fellow men. And I think what's coming to teach you is the main way you serve God is not through sacrifice. The main way you serve God is by the society that you build. You bring sacrifices to remember what your job is as God's people. You need sacrifices, you need ritual, but the main way you serve God in your day-to-day life is your interaction with your fellow man, which includes mishpat, elo mishpatim, keeping laws, and your ethical behavior, even when cases don't go to the court system. So again, these two systems, the first one, mishpatim, which is very similar to ancient Near Eastern law. Everyone studies this, compares this to Hammurabi. It's not copy-paste, it's Jewish law, but we're taking well-known cases and giving what the Jewish psak is, Torah is telling us, this is the proper principle, and then the rabbi is going to apply Arbal Vot Nezikin. And we apply Jewish law, that's the second Nezikin, and we apply that in all cases for the future. There will be tons of Torah Shabbat Peh is going to apply these laws. And then we have ethical laws, which don't go to Beit Din, but guide our behavior because God's going to be watching what we're doing. And we'll see some examples here. They'll echo the story of the Exodus because God will hear our cry. We'll bring some examples. Now, what I want to focus on now is the second section. Remember, Mishpatim, that's classic. The Chiddush now is we have laws even without a judicial system. There's laws that go to the court. There's laws that don't go to the court, but you're responsible because you're Jewish. They're absolute laws about how we have to behave. Let's open up. Let's clear this drawing now. And we're going to make this section now bigger. Bigger, bigger, bigger. That didn't work. We have to close this now and now try to make it bigger. Let's try to make it bigger. Here we go. If I look at the second section, this should do it. Okay. If I look at this section, which I call the ethical section, the tzedaka part, notice the first law is the ger lo toneh ki ger me'etem Mitzrayim. Let's highlight it. And the last law of that section is almost a copy-paste. And what's my point? These two, this opening line and closing line, are going to form an internal envelope of the second section. That's telling you how we treat a stranger is central to the ethical unit. You remember, see the two units, the absolute law and then the case law followed by the absolute law. The absolute law, which is primarily Beinam L'Chavero and ethical behavior, it doesn't go to the court system, but God's watching over things and you're responsible because not every case can go to the court system. That whole system begins with how we treat a stranger, not to mistreat them, don't oppress them. And we repeat the same law at the end. It's a perfect envelope. And what's the reason? And you of all people should have attended that type of nefesh care. You know what it feels like to be a stranger because you were strangers in Egypt. We're going to redeem our history, our suffering, as strangers in someone else's land. And we explained that when we did last week, B'rit Ben Avtarim. We're going to take that theme of our suffering, the reason why God put us through that experience to become a nation, going through suffering, so that collective memory is going to be ingrained in our national memory, in our consciousness. And it's going to guide our day-to-day behavior. Therefore, we have to remember the Exodus every day of our life. But it's not, this is the reason you don't do it because it's wrong, but you of all people shouldn't do it. Remember, you know what it feels like because you were strangers in Egypt. You don't mistreat anybody, but it's easy to mistreat a stranger and to take advantage of them. So this whole unit about how to treat others, it follows by the orphan and the widow, about lending money and not taking interest and returning lost items and not taking bribes and things like that. All that entire unit of ethical behavior begins and ends with the idea of a ger. I think that's critical to understand. And this becomes a unit that we say Nasa v'nishmatu. If I follow in chapter 24 in Parsha Mishpatim, when this is over, this is Sefer Abrit, that we say Nasa v'nishmatu. So let me finish up here. Let me stop the share. I hope that drawing makes sense now. So again, if I go back to my other source sheet, actually I can go back to the source sheet back over here. I call this Echoes of the Exodus. I'll explain why. What happens? Before we left Har Sinai, in these laws, I'll give you one example. I'll open up a regular Chumash here. These were the bookends. Beger lo toneh, but in you, this be a stranger. If you go through all the laws of that section, there's a lot of laws that echo what happened when we were in Egypt. Let me give you some examples in that second section. Open up a Tanakh and open up an English Hebrew one. Where are we? Not this one. This should be here. Let's take a look in Sefer Shemot, chapter 22. Okay. Actually, before that, the end of chapter 22. Listen to this. The very end, right before Moshe, God speaks to Moshe at the burning bush. B'nei Yisrael cried out from the hard work, and God heard the cry from heaven. God heard the repression, the cry. God remembered his brit with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. God saw what was happening, and God knew. And then later in chapter 3, what's the first thing God tells Moshe Rabbeinu with the burning bush? God says, I see the suffering of my people in Egypt. I heard their cry, and I know their suffering, and I'm going now down to save them. Now, remember this idea that God hears the tzaka of the oppressed. That's what happened coming out of Egypt. We get our law code that follows the Ten Commandments that begins in chapter 22, verse 20, with Vigir lo toneh, don't mistreat a stranger and don't oppress him. Don't mistreat a amana. And if you do that, what will happen? If he cries out, if the oppressed person cries out, God will hear their cry, just like God heard our cry in Egypt. And therefore, I'll get angry at you and have to punish you. Yeah? And then what do you call it? The same thing. If you lend money and you take interest or you take the pledge and don't return it when they need it, what happened? When the person in distress calls out to me, I'll hear the cry of the oppressed and punish you because you're mistreating them. So here again, you have echoes of the story of the Exodus in this law system. And the main one, of course, is going to be the opening line, because you were strangers in Egypt. And in chapter, and the ending line again, let's go to the end again, which we're going to spend time on now. In verse 9, after Vershocha lo tikach, not to take bribes. And then Begir lo tochatz, again, don't oppress the stranger. You know what it feels like to be a stranger because you were strangers in Egypt. And that simply supports everything we did last week about why to become God's people, it was necessary in Brit Ben of Tarim, in that first covenant, to go through that oppression for hundreds of years to become God's nation and to remember that every day of our lives. Now, what's the transition from this section to how we serve God? So this ends the between man and fellow man, between Ben Adam l'Chaveiro. Then we have a sort of half transition between man and his fellow man and God, because we have the laws of working the land for 6 years and keeping the Shemitah year. But here, the reason for the Shemitah year is not that the land has to rest for God, but rather, what's it say? The Shemitah year is for the sake of the poor people that year. Of course, it's also important for God, but we're going to emphasize in a law between man and his fellow man, between a law between man and God of Shemitah, we also have caring for the needy. And the same thing with Shabbat. Work 6 days a week and rest on Shabbos. Why? Not to remember only that God created, but remember why he chose you. Because you're a stranger and your workers, they also need a day of rest. And therefore, you need to rest on Shabbat. Again, Ben Adam L'Makom. But the underlying reason has to do with Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. So these three psukim are a beautiful transition between Ben Adam L'Chaveiro and Ben Adam L'Makom, because these laws are between God and man, but they have an element of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. Then we have a summary. Keep all the laws I've commanded you, these last three chapters. Don't mention the names of other gods. Those are the Canaanite gods. The gods of nature, Baal, Asherah, rain god, fertility gods, moon gods, sun gods, all the gods that the Canaanites worshipped, especially the agricultural gods. Instead, don't serve them, don't mention them. Instead, on the key times of the agricultural year, you come and serve me. That's Aliyah L'Regel in Chag Aviv, in Chodesh Aviv, in the beginning of the agricultural season, when the grain begins, at the end of your grain harvest, Chag HaKatzir, when the fruit starts beginning, and finally Chag Asif, at the end of your fruit harvest, when you gather all your things in. Remember, at the critical times of the agricultural year, that God is in charge of your produce. And if you want God to help you with your produce, if you want the powers of nature to be on your side, don't turn to the gods of those other gods, the gods of Canaan. Instead, turn to your God, the God who created the heaven and earth and behind the powers of nature. But based on what will God judge you, based on keeping all these laws. What's Chumash telling you? You remember on the critical times of the agricultural year, on the holidays, you need to remember that there's one God, not many gods, and all of nature is all coming from one God. And God continues to watch over the powers of nature, but he'll reward you and punish you based not on your prayer, but based on your deeds. And therefore, you come to Beit HaMikdash to remember how you have to behave. And that's why this whole section is so important about how we balance between ritual and behavior in becoming God's people. And this becomes the brit that we say in Asa Benishma too in chapter 24. That's chapter 23. If you keep these laws, God will send a malach up as conquer the land of Israel, to set up this people. And then in chapter 24, Moshe teaches all these laws, all these mishpatim he teaches to the people. Moshe writes them down, all these laws that we just read, and they become sefer abrit if I follow Ramban, keeping the story in order. We say nasa v'nishma to this, we sprinkle the blood, and that becomes brit Sinai. So in a nutshell, if I want to summarize, sefer Shmot, Sapta Shir, what we saw today is in sefer Shmot, what do we have? We have a whole set of laws that come with the Ten Commandments. And it's not, it only mentions Ger twice or two, three, actually a couple more times because Shabbat includes the Ger. But in the key section about ethical behavior, in this whole unit that defines our covenant with God, the Ger is central and becomes an envelope about the ethical section of our day-to-day life. And therefore, that ties beautifully with what we saw last week in Sefer Bereshit with Brit Ben Abtarim. Now, Chumash is making the idea of how we treat a stranger critical to our identity as a Jewish people. And now we'll have to see next week that this stranger includes not only a convert, but even someone who's not Jewish. That we have to prove now in the next couple of weeks. So let me stop here and check the chat. Let's see, not that end. I need to close this and open up the chat. How do I find the chat? No, this is a chat. Okay. Let me go back and see what I missed. Okay. Those are private. Okay, that's a source sheet. Okay, we have about the female. We have to deal with Frimas another week. Okay, Rabbi had to leave. Okay, do we know from archaeology, did any pagans have altars with evidence of metalwork or metal tools? That I don't know. I have to ask your local archaeologist. I know there's a lot of altars, pagan altars. I'm assuming they were pretty, we know most likely they used metal to do it, but I'm sure how they made their altars, I never studied that. For an adult male to undergo circumcision, not a simple matter, even in recent years. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Again, how to do the procedure of doing, how difficult the procedure of doing doing circumcision. That's a medical issue. Maybe on the medical ethics conferences, they can talk about that. Did the deceased individual have any medical conditions that would, oh no, that's something. Okay, that was a question there. And we have to do with the Jewish wife, the widow. Oh no, that was a different topic about something happening. That was a conversation going on. Was mating with animals a pagan fertility? I'm not sure. Bestiality, I don't know why anyone would ever think of doing it, but I don't know if it was a pagan custom or just simply crazy behavior. But made it to Chumash that we shouldn't do it. That was like the transition from absolute law to ethical law. Okay, any questions in person? Okay, you need to study the female. Rabbi, do you know the laws about women in Korban Pesach?
I'm sorry, women and?
Korban Pesach. What's in according to Chumash, what does a female need to do to eat Korban Pesach?
Probably
that was a question that came up.
Right, because right, a korban kol harel lo yochobo.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I assume any Jewish woman can eat the korban Pesach.
No, even non-Jewish.
Even non-Jewish, you're saying, right? I don't know. Is that true?
I don't know. That was someone asked a question. I was totally.
I have to look up. I don't know. I can look up.
So I don't feel so bad now. Okay.
Rabbi, I can look up in Hilchot korban Pesach, and
I read them. I remember him mentioning it. But we'll look at it. We'll get to our homework for next week.
It seems strange to me that a non-Jewish woman could eat the Korban Pesach. I don't know why. Just my sort of the difference between Pesach and Sukkot. Sukkot is a very universal holiday. Pesach is a very particularistic holiday.
Yeah.
So, but an interesting question. Yeah. Right?
It's clear in Chumash that in order to become Jewish, males have to do Brit Milah.
Right, right.
But the question is, what does a female have to do other than get married to a Jew? Yeah.
I'll try to look it up if I have time. But thanks. Okay. So you look it up too. Yeah, ask around. It's I'm sure it's been a long time since we brought the Korban Pesach. So Although that was a big discussion in the 19th century, yeah. Big discussion. Many great gedolim wanted to reinstitute Korban Pesach. It's the easiest korban to reinstitute halachically. Although
according to Sefer Shmuel, we keep Korban Pesach. A family meal at the home. Not Korban Pesach. Pesach. Zevach Pesach.
Zevach Pesach.
We don't sprinkle blood on our doors, but.
In the Chumash, it seems
The family meal, everyone gathering together and talking about the story of the Exodus and on a fleshic meal.
I've never understood. It says by Yaakov, like the question of the so-called Russia. I mean, it's not the Russian the Chumash, but Chazal interpret by Yaakov. It sounds like the Torah is telling us that in every generation we have to put the blood on the doorpost. That's a simple pshat in the Chumash. No.
Yeah, when you come to land of Israel, do the same avodah.
And your kid's going to say avodah zelachem, which for whatever reason the Chazal interpret as the Russia, but leave that aside. Avodah, and then you tell him, it's a zevach Pesach, and you got to put the blood on the doorpost. It sounds like we're telling him for when you arrive in the land of Israel. It's for every year. It's not just when we left Pesach.
It sounds like it's something you do at home.
Right.
And in Devarim, all of a sudden, you're afraid of a mot, so you kept
doing the shalom. Putting the blood, right. It sounds like you do it at home when you have the...
I'm just saying that the Jewish people are fulfilled. Our seders is the seder of Sefer Shmot. A family meal with an invitation, with matzah and maror, not like the whole, meat with matzah. It's a full meal, sit-down meal, properly dressed, getting ready with preparation. Everything that goes with it, which is nice. Now, right. The other thing was another question. But that was fine. That was for Sefer Shmot. Okay.
Our Sefer Dvarim is, presents a whole other set.
That's because of Bamot. That's a whole.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
You can show that by going to hotels.
All right. My apologies again. I'm glad you were here. It's amazing how much people rely on the reminder email, but, please, I hope our system will get fixed as soon as we can. But if not, our Zoom is working. It's just the email notifications weren't. So, but it's the same email for all our classes. And that class is.
We did get here.
I'm really talking to people who didn't get here, but of course maybe they'll listen online, whatever. But, but tomorrow we have Mark Shapiro's class and you can wish him a mazel tov because he had the bris of his grandson this morning. And of course he was by us for Shabbos. It was quite we worked out well. We had
the baby. Which child had the baby?
His daughter. Which daughter? That's a good question. Not the one in medical school.
Not Daniela.
Yeah, no. So it was in New Rochelle this morning. So okay. Mark, we had him as a scholar in residence. This show is the first one we've had since, we had David Silver and Michelle Farber back to back in February 2020. And we really haven't. And we've had one or two people pass through Toronto speak, but this is the first time we had our whole well, Shabbos, he spoke nine times, it was whatever. Anyways, but all right, slowly getting a little bit back to, I don't know what you call it. Anyways, okay, everybody be well. Please invite your friends and tell them don't rely on the email to print it out once, and that's where they can come to all the classes they want. This week's Parsha class will be given by Rabbi Atshalom, Yitzchak Atshalom, who Rabbi Liebtag knows very well, I believe. And was he a student of yours? No,
we're colleagues. We were in Shiva the same
right. Year. I don't know exactly.
78, he was there, 78, 79.
He was there in Gush in 78, 79. Yeah. When were you the Madrich in Gush? In the 80s?
From 81.
From 81. How long were you Madrich in Gush?
Full-time till 96, and then part-time till today.
When you were single, you were like the American dorm counselor in Gush, right?
No, I was unofficially that, but I became, after I got married, I got the job.
Oh, you were the unofficial.
I was in Hesder. I was in Hesder from 77 to 81.
Uh-huh. No, because I remember you being a Gush, before you were married.
Your brother was around, yeah. Nori was there in 83, 84.
My brother was there 83, 84, 85. I was in Gush then, right. So that's why I would come around there. I'm up to Bori. Lav Shalom Gushkurs had been my Rosh Yeshiva in Toronto. So we went to visit him a few times in Gush and whatever. Okay, everybody. I don't know why people listen to our personal conversations here, but they're more than welcome. It's okay. Maybe it's for some people, it's the most interesting part of the shiur. I don't know. But anyways, okay. Shavuot Tov, everybody. Be well. Thank you very much. We look forward to learning with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.